books. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Each season has special foods that we've come to associate with it, and summer is no exception. But perhaps you'd like to spice up those summer favorites, or at least freshen them up with the freshest ingredients. And we're not just talking about food here. We're talking drink. And we're not just musing on the topic. We're about to take action on it, because this hour we'll be hearing from some food and drink experts about how to bring some new twists to old favorites. Johnson & Wales chef on assignment Peter Reinhardt is back with us to focus on food. By the way, he's just finished writing his 10th book, Bread Revolution, which will be released in October. Will the bread revolution be televised? That's just the question. I just want to know. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Stefan Huebner is owner of Creative Cocktail Consultants and is a cocktail sensei. Is that how you say it?
That is.
At Heist Brewery. And obviously he will be focused on mixology this hour. Bring that microphone a little closer to you, yep, if you would. Thank you. And we're joined by Kat Harris, the founder and publisher of Edible Charlotte magazine. She'll be helping us to find some of those freshest of the fresh ingredients for food and drink, and sharing some of the food events scheduled this season that you might want to include on your calendar. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
One of those events would be the Bacon and Brews Cruise Inn at Atherton Mill and Market on June 29th from 3 to 7 p.m. It features bacon, beer, and classic cars. We'll be talking about that.
Yes.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, email charlottetalks@wfae.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter. Summer food seems to me to be simple food, the simplest, least fussy food of the year. Grilling out, salads, punches, alcoholic or not. Am I right about all this?
Yeah, I think that simple is in for sure. This heat forces the issue. Mm-hmm. So, keeping it simple. But I think that what's great about summer food is that you really focus on the food itself. You get to taste food at its freshest, and that's what people really love.
And when you think about summertime drinks, I mean, everybody wants an ice cold beer. Do they really care about the fancy cocktails this time of year?
They do. It's you do have to take the heat into consideration. You know, a lot of the bourbons and scotches come off the list for summertime, and you're going more citrus forward with vodkas and gins and like cachaça. With the World Cup going on right now, everybody's into Brazil, so the cachaça is a big thing.
Don't mint juleps have bourbon in them?
They do, but that, you got to remember, that's early in the spring for the Derby.
Right.
You know,
oh, really?
All that stuff starts waning off now, and I mean, it's going to be 95 degrees with 90% humidity.
So once you can wear white shoes and white pants, yeah, you can't have bourbon. Is that the rule now? Is that it?
There's never a rule. Bourbon's always good. But, but for the masses, it's, you get that bourbon heat. You want to get away from that and roll into the freshest side.
What is it about summertime that wants you to lighten up on the...
It's the heat.
That's it? That
and, you know, your poolside, and you want to look good. You want to take some of those calories out of those cocktails too.
Actually, I have a question about that later on in the show, because I don't believe it's true. summer also seems to be a time of traditional foods, because there are traditional summertime foods: hot dogs, hamburgers, steaks on the grill, chicken. What else? Potato salad. Almost as traditional as Thanksgiving? You expect certain foods.
I expect watermelon for sure.
Yes,
I associate definitely summer and watermelon big time.
Peaches. For me, crabs.
Yeah.
Crabs is a big thing.
Yeah. Okay. The peaches are about to come in, aren't they?
They're starting to already,
And it also seems that this is the time of year when the freshest foods are available, because they're being grown and harvested in many cases right now. Strawberries, watermelons, what else? What else is fresh in the farmer's market right now?
Well, actually, so strawberries are on their way out.
And
if you didn't get them, you can try to grab them this weekend. But they were amazing this year. So peaches are starting to come in. In the next couple of weeks, we'll see corn. This is actually, I think, really when we shine a lot. There's so much that is grown in this area. So you've got the peaches, you've got okra coming in. The tomatoes started to arrive in full force this last weekend, which was really exciting. Mm-hmm. Good tomatoes, lots of different colors, varieties. I had to take a shot of a BLT sandwich just to get it out there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all the black-eyed peas are going to start to come in. You have fresh beans, so the green beans, and beautiful heirloom varieties like dragon's tongue. And then a little bit later, they'll turn into shell beans, which you know, spend some time sitting on the porch opening up.
So I'm older than you, so I remember tomatoes before the grocery stores got them.
Yes,
and made them into cardboard.
Right.
These are not the tomatoes I'm talking about.
Can you buy at a farmer's market these heirloom tomatoes, the tomatoes of my ute?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the ones I was just talking about that I put on the BLT, I had to put that picture up because I said it's the first legitimate BLT because it's the first legitimate tomato of the season. And we're talking about ones that come gnarly and, you know, look like fists.
Right.
And they come in different colors and shapes, and they sometimes have, you know, like cracks in them just from the weather, you know, the rain and everything like that. And so they don't look uniform. They're not green at the top because the farmers are letting them ripen right until the point that they harvest it to take it to the market. And they're so sweet and so juicy, and they are not at all like what you get at the grocery store.
Tomatoes aren't the only heirloom vegetable, although to me they might be the most flavorful heirloom. Oh, that's actually a fruit, isn't it? Tomatoes.
It is a fruit.
I think it is. But there are other heirloom varieties of heirloom fruits and vegetables. Are they similar in revelatory flavor?
I think so. I mean, with the beans that I was talking about, it's not just flavor, but it's also texture and even color. Like the dragon's tongue have this just awesome kind of cranberry purple streak running through the outside of it. And then, you see things like cranberry lima beans sometimes, and those have lots of different colors. Okra, I think everyone knows what the regular Clemson spineless okra looks like, but it comes in burgundy, which is the color of Stefan's shirt here. and if you don't just kind of, you know, boil it, if you keep it fried or something like that, then the color survives the cooking process, and it's really, really beautiful. So it's definitely not
where
just
can you
tomatoes.
Get that?
I find things like that at the Yorkmont Market and at Atherton, Matthews Community Farmers Market, Davidson. There's some smaller – there's so many markets. If you want to talk about markets, we can talk about
we'll
markets.
Talk about
but,
them.
Yep.
And, Stefan, when I think about fresh drinks, the freshest thing in a drink mostly is going to be the ice or the mint that goes
in. Depending on the cocktail. But
there are other things that you talk about in summertime where you can really have fresh ingredients in a drink.
I mean, you know, you come to Heist, and on the bar we have that big bowl of fruit. You know, come peach times, we'll be doing like a peach smash where it is, you know, we're using a bourbon, but we're using fresh peach that gets muddled in. We all hit the farmer market. I actually grow all our own mint, rosemary, and basil for our cocktails at Heist.
Really?
I got in a great little garden. I live over in Windsor Park and got, you know, quarter of an acre chopped up in the backyard, and we use a lot of that for the bar side. Can't use it in the kitchen as much because the amount of volume we do, but it, you know, for the bar we use our stuff that I've grown myself.
And is there demand, because you're a mixologist, is there a demand for fresh ingredients in drinks in the summertime more so than any other time of the year, or is it something you just provide because it's the thing to do in your mind?
I think that there's just more of a trend going on as a whole where people want fresh. They want to know where their food's coming from. They want to know that there's the pride taken in of going that extra step, whether it be in the kitchen or behind the bar.
You know, you work at Heist Brewery. It's a local brewery, and there's a big – we've done several shows on beer, and there's a lot of local interest in freshly brewed local beers here. Are the people who want those freshly brewed local beers the same people who we would categorize as foodies, who go to farmers markets, who want to go to restaurants that buy the freshest ingredients? Are they the same people?
Without a doubt. They are all the same people. They all get lumped into that big foodie group who want to, A, support the local guy that, you know, they like the fact they know the guy who is brewing their beer.
Mm-hmm.
They like the fact that they know the person knowing their local farmer. That's what drives them to go to the farmer's market. I think it's that personal relationship with those people that goes along with the fact that they're getting the freshness that they desire.
And the two communities kind of drive each other. I think the food community was quick on the draw to see what was happening in the brewing side and saw how it fit right in. And I think the people that were drawn to the beers also were able to open up to some of the fresh produce and start to support the local farmers markets if they weren't already doing that. So they've kind of merged in a way.
If you are into this fresh food movement and this local farm movement, be it for your dining pleasure or your drinking pleasure, can you do it inexpensively? Or are you going to pay more for it because it is fresh and it's not available at a big box grocery store?
That's a big question. It's almost a ethical, philosophical question.
Yes.
because we want to support all of these good movements, and at the same time, other people have said, but it's very elitist. The people, in order to be able to buy all the things and support the farmers, you pay more than you could do by going to Walmart and buying your produce, and that's probably true. So it becomes, I think, really a question of quality over quantity, and that's something each person, I think, has to grapple with. It's not easy to feed the food deserts in our city
right.
with the high quality, great tasting food that we're talking about buying from the farmers markets. But at the same time, just like beer and food kind of support each other community wise, these movements, these food movements, where great support of farmers and farm to table stuff also eventually trickles down to mainstream, and it will affect and is already affecting the way people that normally wouldn't eat that way just starting to wake up to it, I think.
Well, it's the first full week of summer, and it's a little after 9 o'clock in the morning, and so the first question from a listener is about drinking.
It's Monday.
Kim from Small City Farm emails, I'd like a cocktail recipe that uses lots of mint that isn't a mojito or a mint julep, and also a recipe for a savory, not sweet, quick bread that uses lots of zucchini. Let's start with the drinking.
First off, hi, Kim. Haven't talked to you in a while. Good to hear from you. Tell Rowan I said hello. I'll just shoot you an email, but with the mint, because it is, with the weather we've had, it's been blossoming. My garden is exploding. I'm a big fan of like a mint tea. You use a gin, cucumber, mint, and a little pekoe tea. Absolutely amazing.
Really?
But yeah. I like the pekoe just because it gives that slight bitterness kind of on the back. And it makes for a great summer cocktail.
Okay. And what about this bread that's savory, not sweet, and using a lot of
zucchini? Well, before I address the bread, we're tasting now an herbal tea that kind of fits the – it's a tea. It's a non-alcoholic beverage but could be used as a base. I think when I was creating this, I kept thinking this would be great to sort of use as a base for adding various – whether it's vodka or whatever you want to do to spike it up a little bit. And it has – so that recipe will be available, I believe, on the website.
Is this the hibiscus and citrus sugar-free iced tea?
It's a sugar-free iced tea. I'm moving away as much as I can from sugar, trying to use stevia or other natural sweeteners when I need something sweet, because I'm just trying to get sugar. I think the public has finally kind of agreed that sugar is not good for us, even though we love sugar. So I'm looking for ways to get it out of my diet.
Now this is tea, so it has three bags of Celestial Seasoning Red Zinger Tea and three bags of Lemon or Orange Zinger Tea.
And those are just types that you can use. Those are brands that are accessible, but you could use any favorite tea blend, herbal teas.
And then it's got black tea in it,
which is optional. I like to put a little bit in just to give it a little wake-up quality, but if you want to make it totally herbal, you can. And then in the batch we're drinking, I took some fresh mint from my garden and steeped it in with the tea, and then added some lemon and lime juice, which I think together they're great, better than the sum of the parts. But if you have one or the other, you can do that. And then sweeten it up, whether you use honey, sugar, or in this case, liquid stevia. Just know that a teaspoon of liquid stevia is equal in power and sweetening power to 1 cup of sugar.
Good Lord.
So 1 teaspoon of stevia, very
concentrated.
It's about 350 times more sweet, in density than sugar. So that's but no calories.
And we will put that on our website at wfae.org/CharlotteTalks. We're going to come back and talk more about summer foods and ingredients and drinks as we go along this hour. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Now at our new Charlotte location, Morrowcroft Village, and at DonaldHack.com. Well, Carolina's healthcare system has long been an innovator, having launched a nationally known stroke center, especially children's hospital, and they are known for conducting research on heart disease. Well, now they've launched a pilot program to bring behavioral health care to primary care offices, and in doing so, they've started something, a kind of a new type of medicine. They're getting on board with something called telemedicine, in this case, telepsychiatry. What's that? Find out tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama is sending 300 special forces to bolster the Iraq government against Islamic militants. The latest on the Iraq crisis and the security threat it poses to the region and the U.S.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking summer foods and summer drinks with the freshest ingredients with Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University, Stefan Hubner, owner of Cocktail Consultants. You come in and consult people about what they're drinking?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we're writing cocktail lists for people all over the city.
Okay. And Kat Harris. I didn't know. Kat Harris, founder and publisher of Edible Charlotte magazine. Now, I want to get an answer to Kim's question about a savory, not sweet quick bread with zucchini, Peter.
Well, zucchini is a savory vegetable, and it happens to make a great sweet bread when you add sugar to it, but if you leave the sugar out, what you've really got is essentially bread pudding or something like stuffing or a casserole. Mm-hmm. And so it could be used that way. So following any good zucchini bread recipe, which gives you the balance of baking powder and soda and other ingredients, leave the sugar out and add chopped onions, like perhaps for each loaf, one good-sized onion chopped up into the mix. So that kind of completes the savory.
Any particular kind of onion?
It really doesn't matter because once you cook an onion, it sweetens it up.
Okay.
So you don't have to use Vidalia's. You can use a yellow or a red. But by putting zucchini and onions together, you kind of complete that savory, what I call the turkey stuffing sort of effect. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's herbs to your choice. And I would be very light-handed with herbs, that being summer fresh herbs, a little bit of maybe some fresh thyme, parsley, things like that in there. And then one other option is for the liquid, and you can, instead of using milk or water as your liquid, you could use like chicken stock or vegetables broth as your liquid, which will add, again, a richer savory quality. Then you just bake it up like a loaf.
Okay.
And when it's done, slice it, serve it like, you know, as toast it up and serve it on the side, or chop it up and use it like a stuffing.
Can you put cheese on top?
And then,
cheese on top of everything, right?
We are creating on the spot, you know, an instant recipe off the top of our head, challenged by a listener, and now you've added a cheese melt to it. So we're moving. We're almost ready to open the restaurant
later.
Because fresh ingredients can sometimes be more expensive if you don't grow them in your own garden, and because fresh ingredients aren't fresh for very long, like if you, I often buy basil at the grocery store and think I'm going to use all this, and then it just turns black and I don't use any of it except maybe a couple of leaves. Are there ways to make certain fresh ingredients go further by using them in a lot of stuff, but not so much that you're going to get bored with them, so everything tastes like mint or everything tastes like fennel? I mean, are there ways to do it?
That's a great question.
I think this is I'm going to kind of answer your question two ways. One is, you know, you can buy stuff that's fresh and then process it so that it'll last a longer period of time, right? So a lot of times we talk about making basil pesto and then freezing it in cubes so you can use it in doses instead of having to use all that basil right away. The other thing I try to encourage people when there's – a lot of people ask me about starting a garden and what should I grow. And one of the first things I say is your biggest money saver is going to be herbs because of that fact. You buy this tiny little pack for $3 to $4 at the store and then you throw half of it away. But if you just have like a basil plant and thyme, you're going to be really happy for most of the summer. And then, you know, extending, I think that there's things, you know, with the peas and the beans and corn, all of that stuff, you can freeze it or you can, you know, blanch some things and then have them in your fridge and they're already kind of half cooked and that'll kind of hold them for a little bit longer. And I don't know, Peter, if you've got
some blanching slows down the breakdown caused by enzymes so that it will preserve them. And whether you freeze them or refrigerate them, it will extend the shelf life quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. So how do you blanch?
Blanching is just a parboiling. You know, we're boiling it for a very short amount of time. Uh-huh. Just till, in the case of peas, when it hits that water, you stir it around for about 30 seconds, it'll brighten up the green a little bit.
Yeah, they get nice and green.
It will preserve that color. And then you pull them out and then shock them in some cold water. Get some ice water ready on the side. Drop them in the ice water to stop the cooking so that you don't overcook them. And then you're ready to put them away.
Here's a question from one of our producers that I would never have thought of, but it's a good one, so I'll ask it. Since we wear fewer clothes in the summer, Are there foods that we should avoid if we want to look our best? In other words, what foods are filling but not fluffing?
Oh, this goes back to, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it ain't beer, so be quiet.
We're not cutting beer out.
Well.
Well, vegetables always, you know, the more vegetables and the lower the starches, you know, we're already ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges in summertime is that we tend to drink a lot of iced teas, uh-huh. and using sugars and honeys, as good as they taste, are adding a lot of empty calories. So that either learning to enjoy them with less sweetness or using a natural sweetener like stevia can get you through that.
We tend to drink more, period, hopefully to hydrate with waters and things like that. But people drink a lot of colas and teas. And, you know, alcohol, as we all know, turns to sugar in our bloodstream. And mm-hmm. many summer cocktails contain added sugar, punches and things like that. Is that unavoidable, or are there ways to reduce the sugar in these summertime drinks and still make them tasty?
I personally love agave. Your body breaks it down better. You are using less calories, but at the end of the day, there's still a lot of calories and dead sugars in the spirit you're using to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't agave come from the same plant that makes tequila?
Yes.
Well, no wonder you love it.
But agave is a lot better for your body than like the white granule sugar or your corn syrups. Your body just naturally breaks it down better. I use agave a lot. At Heist, we do a blend of agave and simple. Agave is more expensive, but it comes down back to one of those times where you take costs and put it against quality.
Do you use stevia? This is that miracle sweetener that Peter keeps pushing. He's a stevia pusher.
He's a little pusher man over there. I haven't yet. Maybe something we're going to look into.
Okay. I think the other thing is, especially in the summer, with what you have access to, and it does require a little bit of a shift on people's palate, but because of the abundance of fresh fruits, you can rely more on the sweetness that come naturally from the fruits like watermelon and citrus. Well, not so much citrus, but and take out some of that simple sugar that's really heavy and more present in kind of fall and winter.
Just using
drinks.
The natural sugars that was from
gonna
fruit.
That was going to be a question I was going to ask you, because you had some suggestions, Peter, for ways to replace sugar in sweet recipes, and one of the things that you recommended was a berry, and we have the recipe here, I think, someplace that would be on our website, the berry and peach sugar-free crisp. And my question was, that sounds good, mm-hmm. and I like those things, but if berries and peaches are in season, why not just eat them? why put them in a bowl.
Why not? Yeah, I agree.
Grab a spoon and eat them.
I agree. Probably the best way to eat anything like that is, you know, right off the tree, right off the bush, sweet and fresh. But we do like to cook, too, and when you want to have a nice dessert after a gathering, a grilled barbecue event of some sort, crisps are a great summer dessert.
Why?
Because there's something about the crackle and crunch of the topping mm-hmm. blended with the fruit and the sweetness underneath, and it's a great vehicle for ice cream.
Which is, again,
summer is ice cream, you know. Yeah. But they're calorie-driven, so just to make them a little more guilt-free, and they're not totally guilt-free because there's going to be the sweetness and everything else, is I try to pull the sugar out where I can. Uh-huh. So again, replacing the sugar in the crunch, in the crisp mm-hmm. of the apple crisp or the berry crisp or whatever, the peach crisp, using stevia as the sweetener, it works really well. And you get the same pleasure from the mouthfeel of it.
And of course, we don't have to worry about the fat grams in the crisp part of it, because as Time magazine pointed out, we should all be eating tons of butter
now. Butter's good, yeah. It's funny how these things come around, isn't it? Actually, Julia Child was right.
Actually, I think it was Bill Maher who said that these magazines are now pandering to people because people want to eat bad things. And so if you tell them it's okay, they'll buy your magazine to find out why. You suggest low-calorie, low-alcohol drinks. What fun are you, Stefan? Made with vodka, gin, and rum. And you specifically mentioned a rum with water drink with powdered low-cal drink mix, which actually sounds a bit disgusting to me.
This is for the ladies who are poolside, who are watching their figure. That by far, it wouldn't be my drink of choice, but it is what is kind of one of the big summer hits. And it'll just use like a Mio or any
what
of those.
What is Mio?
Mio is the you can buy it at the supermarket. It's a little non-calorie fruit.
It's like
concentrate.
A liquid crystal.
It's like
light.
Almost like a crystal light.
Instead of being a powder,
you just put a little squirt in it. They make Gatorade versions of it now. It's just a high concentrated.
It's the 21st century Kool-Aid.
Basically, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a high concentrate where you can add as much or as little as you like, and it's zero calorie. They're actually pretty tasty.
And you also say at the top of your drink list is the margarita. You say that's
the classic, and it is the summer drink.
Why?
It's like everybody loves a margarita.
I don't like them. Why does everybody like them?
Refreshing, and that balance of sour, sweet, and savory. You lick that salt rim, you get that. And I mean, and what everybody's doing now is there's so many different ways to make it. You can use watermelon water for your margarita, or raspberries. You can add whatever you want. The margarita is just such a classic that you can embellish on that can go in any direction you like.
And tequila is very big right now, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, people have
there's so many different kinds.
Yeah, and there is. You have your reposados and your blancos, and it's completely a different. They might as well be two different spirits, even though they're made from the exact same thing.
Did I misread this that you suggest making a margarita with beer?
That's a big one I enjoy and we're going to be doing this summer.
What kind of beer?
A light beer, just something light and crisp. It gives you that carbonation you like, and then you can get some of the qualities that I like from either the hops that are in the beer or the strain of yeast that you're using. That gives it just another extra texture, another layer of flavor inside that cocktail.
Go ahead, Peter.
Stefan, I have a question for you, too. What about ciders? Are they coming in? It seems like cider could be the next big thing.
It's been a big thing for a while. There's been a lot of the big beer companies, the Anheuser's and the Miller's and those guys, they've been making cider for a while, and you have it coming over from England. Now you're having all these small boutique cider companies, just like the microbreweries.
Yeah.
You're having micro cider companies that are popping up, and I see it as a big thing because a lot of times it is more for the female demographic, the cider. And so you have the guys coming into the breweries and their girls don't drink beer. Then they ask if we have a cider, and you're starting to see the boutique cider companies starting to pop up.
I was just up at Appalachian Mountain Brewery up in Boone, and they're coming out with a whole line of ciders, and suddenly it seemed like this could be a whole new wave of
– Very much so.
I feel like this is – I gotta chime in here because this is – I've been on this cider kick for a couple of years, and it feels like the rosé of kind of the beer world. I personally have no problem drinking a dry rosé, and it's the same with cider. And the more I dug into it, I actually researched it a couple of years ago. It seems like in our country, cider was big before beer was big. And you think about the immigration waves, everyone had cider. Everyone was growing apples, a few trees at least, and they had cider, and they would even kind of dilute it and give it to their kids because it was clean. And so cider's been around for a long time, and I'm almost kind of hating to see it being pigeonholed to this, it's for the female set because for the longest time it was masculine and feminine. Yeah.
I feel like
it.
I must be in touch with my feminine side because I love cider.
I love cider.
I love rosés.
Yeah. Quite frankly, being in the heat and the humidity of this area, I think cider is a very refreshing alternative
and
to
it,
a lot
and
of
And it makes
drinks.
A great mixer too, doesn't it?
Very much so.
And I'm not talking about the ciders, that are loaded with sugar and apple juice and stuff like that. I'm talking about the ones that are pressed. And there's a great opportunity in this state because we grow a lot of apples here. Yeah. And I think we're seventh in the nation.
So. Restaurants tend to change their menus seasonally. So, and I know that summer ushers in a lot of changes. And you, as you've talked to chefs, because that's one of the things you do as the founder and publisher of Edible Charlotte magazine, what are they telling you about their menu plans?
Well, this is actually a really great time because a lot of the chefs are kind of moving off of their first or second wave spring menus and are moving into kind of the high summer. So all the vegetables that we were talking about, they're just as excited about the tomatoes showing up, okra, corn, peppers, hot peppers. I think you're going to see a lot of menus reflecting all of that abundance. Specifically, I know that Chef Coleman at the Asbury is working with his sous chef to kind of have a new menu that's got a lot of kind of Latin inspiration, which is just perfect with all, again, those peppers and everything like that. So there's some really neat things happening there. So kind of the – some things are just tiny shifts. Like I was talking to Chef Bruce Moffat at Barrington's, and he, you know, he's got this salad, and he took the strawberries out, again, because they're on their way out, and he put beets in. And when he put the beets in, he did this really interesting – goat cheese cacao nib combo to kind of play off of that. So there's a little bit of bitterness to play off the sweet of the beet. So the salad is kind of there, and he's just kind of shifting, you know, what's being featured with that salad based on what's available and what's coming out from the farmers.
I think it was his restaurant that you were talking about with grouper dishes now featuring fennel. Was that his restaurant or somebody else's restaurant? Grouper. It doesn't matter, but are you supposed to eat grouper? Isn't it endangered?
No. it's complicated. So there's different fisheries, and there's different grouper. I would say the last I had read up on this, in the Caribbean area, they were having some challenges with grouper because the lionfish, which I don't know if you've read about this, it's actually a pretty interesting story. They are not native to those waters, and they don't have a natural predator. And so they've been actually eating a lot of like the grouper eggs, which was causing an issue with reproduction. But and in terms of the North Carolina fisheries, I think grouper is actually in pretty reasonable shape.
Okay.
So you got to think about where you're getting your grouper. That's the big question.
Bill emails, what about summer herbs that are unique to this region or that are from outside but thrive here? What should we be looking for?
Ooh, boy. I have a feeling I know what bill that is. so we actually just did an issue. The last issue was all about herbs and spices. And through that, I felt like I learned a lot about what thrives here. But as a result, I planted borage, which I had never really heard of. And it's got a really interesting taste to it. It almost has like a cucumber quality to it. And some people would even say it kind of tends towards like a oyster or fish at the end. Mm. And you can eat the flowers, and the leaves are a little prickly, but
they're
you can cook
them. They're
very
pretty flowers.
They're beautiful. They're kind of a blue purple.
I personally, I mean, they're already out of season, but ramps
yes.
are rampant in North Carolina. and they make for great cocktails. I steep it and make a simple syrup out of it and have used it in cocktails. I like ramps a lot.
Are ramps like baby leeks? Isn't that what a ramp
wild
is?
Onions.
So they take
wild
onions.
Onion. Yeah,
wild
they
onions.
Taste like onions. So
yeah, very pungent.
You put them in cocktails?
Yeah.
As opposed to a little cocktail onion?
Well, I mean, no, but it's actually kind of almost like a twist on a Gibson.
On a Gibson.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a great way to, you know, I've got pickled ramps in my fridge. That's a great way to cut calories right there. The other thing I would say, which is really exciting about this area and our climate, is a lot of peculiar flavors, or not peculiar, but, you know, unusual flavors that you don't necessarily think about, you can find at the market in abundance, especially as we kind of move towards the later part of the summer and into fall. We get things like lemongrass. And ginger later towards the fall, and they grow very well here. And I think more farmers are starting to grow things like that that aren't the normal kind of European set of herbs.
I know that lemon balm grows like crazy in my garden. It's like a weed, and I love it because it has a wonderful smell, and you can use it like mint, and it has that, and yet, you know, it's growing like crazy.
We have to take a break. We could come back and talk more about this, and we'll get some questions answered from people in Indian Trail and elsewhere who have come in over the transom as we've been talking about summer foods and drinks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. President Obama is sending 300 special forces to bolster the Iraqi government against Islamic militants. Guest host Susan Page and a panel of experts talk about the latest on the crisis and the security threat it poses to the region and the United States coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. By the way, our food blog, WFA Eats, explores food and culture in the Charlotte region. You can check it out at WFAEats.org. And we'll be posting some of the recipes and things we're talking about at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks, which is also how you can get to us in addition to Twitter and Facebook. And we're coming right back.
The Charlotte Symphony's Summer Pops finale honors Independence Day with Celebrate America, a patriotic concert featuring America the Beautiful, Armed Forces Salute, This Land is Your Land, and more. Fireworks follow the concert at Symphony Park next Thursday evening, July 3rd. Details at charlottesymphony.org. WFAE is pleased to be a media partner.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Summertime food and drinks, what we're talking about with Kat Harris, founder and publisher of Edible Charlotte magazine. Stefan Huebner is owner of Cocktail Consultants and a cocktail sensei, whatever the heck that is, at Heist Brewery. And Peter Reinhardt is our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales University. A couple of things that have come in. Sharon and Indian Trail emails. I live in Union County and have been unsuccessful in finding a farmer's market or vegetable stand out here that does not refrigerate their tomatoes. I thought it was fairly common knowledge that a tomato should never be refrigerated, yet it seems to me that all of the sellers put their produce into refrigerated coolers at night. I don't know if that's true or not, but
I have heard of this happening on rare occasion, and it breaks my heart. Honestly, I'd have to research it. The only market that I know of in that area pretty well is the one on Skyline, and it doesn't appear that they do that there, but I'd have to dig a little bit deeper.
We go to the Matthews Farmers Market. I don't know whether the growers refrigerate bring it in. I can't imagine why they would need to since they're selling it that
they
day.
They don't.
The problem with refrigerating tomatoes is that the temperature of the refrigerator stops enzyme activity, which is actually ripening and sweetening your tomatoes.
Right.
So once you put them in the refrigerator, they won't get any sweeter after that, and that's the biggest flaw.
Yeah. Cameron emails that she recommends using watermelon tonic in drinks, and she gets her kids to drink more water by adding frozen watermelon.
I'm a big fan of now that the great genetics of the seedless watermelon. I'm a big fan of removing all the rind and cubing watermelon and freezing it, and almost using it as an ice cube in just club soda. And as it melts, you're getting this great natural watermelon in your. Just club soda. So you get the fizz and a little bit of the watermelon.
And is watermelon really high in like lycopene or something? Isn't it super high in?
Tomatoes are.
And I think watermelon as well. Really good for you. So.
Yeah.
Bill emails suggestions for summer drinks. Super cold limoncello, iced tea with peppermint schnapps, and iced tea with limoncello.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about batch cocktails because a lot of people have parties and they just throw a bunch of stuff into a punch bowl in great big pitchers, and that's what they're serving.
Yeah.
So get used to it. What makes for good batch cocktails?
The batch cocktail is great because you can make it ahead of time. Your guests can serve themselves. It's just and you're just using whatever's fresh around you. You can just literally go and like blackberries, raspberries, blueberries, throw them all in with if you can get ahead of time, you just take whatever kind of container or water. Freeze it so you have one big cube that keeps the dilution down, so your batch cocktail won't get diluted and watered down tasting. And then, I mean, vodka is, you know, a neutral spirit. It's going to take on the taste of whatever you're adding to it. I like using a lot of botanical gins, like your Hendrix, your Cardinal Gin, which is local, made over in Kings Mountain. They have a more botanical feel, and they just add that extra layer of flavor that with whatever you're making.
Okay. Let's talk about food again. Hot dogs, hamburgers, things on the grill like chicken, steak, and other products that we would put, vegetables. Are there new twists on that, or do people really want that? Or when they see you grilling out, they have anticipation of what they're going to be eating, and that's what they want. Do they want you to doctor it up?
Well, I think for one thing for sure, hot dogs and hamburgers are never going to go away. They're just and there's something wonderful about a great hot dog, a well-made hot dog. It's a type of sausage. We think of hot dogs as its own thing, but it's really a sausage.
What's your favorite brand?
I don't know that I have a favorite brand, although even the Nathan's is fine, Hebrew National, they're all fine. But there's some locally made hot dogs. Now, there's a new butcher in town here, What's Your Beef? Down at the 7th Street Public Market. He's now making homemade hot dogs, you know, with locally raised beef and
what's
pigs
in
and all sorts. Well, no preservatives and spices. It's what makes a hot dog good is, number one, the meat is ground really, really fine. It's not coarsely chopped like a regular sausage. And then it's usually made with some ice and everything else to kind of keep it super cold. And spices. And the spices could be anything from coriander to peppers and, you know, usually salt and garlic. A great, probably my favorite all-time sausage is a great kielbasa, a Polish sausage, something about the garlic and the salt. So those things, I think, are just classics, just like we were talking about classic beverages earlier. They'll never go away. But any kind of sausage is just works. And burger, if you think about it, a burger is just a type of beef sausage. It's a patty made from ground beef and then cooked in a certain way. So there's this category that I call sausages that you know is huge. And there's something about grinding and then respicing and combining and then adding heat to it that creates a transformation of flavors that works. It works for people the same way that pizza works, the same way that a margarita works. And there's just certain things that our palates love, the interplay of spicy, salty, bitter, and sweet. And when you can bring those four elements together and maybe you throw in this umami quality, which comes with meat, you're happy. It makes you happy.
Hmm. We once did a grilling show on this program where we actually were outside and we were having chefs at local restaurants come in here and grill. We ought to do that every day, actually. I don't know why we don't. And I had the most remarkable piece of steak I think I've ever had. And I watched him do it, and I don't understand what he did. That made it so wonderful. It looks just like what I did, but when I do it, it doesn't taste like that.
That was Paul Malcolm, one of the chef instructors at Johnson & Wales, who teaches the meat fabrication class.
Yeah.
Well, part of it was high heat, cooking steak over grill, high heat, searing the outside. In his case, I remember Paul didn't salt his steaks ahead of time. I usually put salt on at the beginning and like to kind of sear the salt in. But his worked really well by adding the salt at the end. Uh-huh. And he felt that made a difference because it affected the juices
kind
in a certain way.
It doesn't draw the juice out as much.
Yeah, it doesn't pull the juice out as much. But high heat at the beginning is so critical because that flavor that we're looking for in a steak is partly in the crust as well as not overcooking it. And then letting it sit for at least 5 to 10 minutes after it comes off the high heat for the juices to redistribute.
Are there ways to make these things, the traditional barbecue or grilling out kind of favorites, different so that people go, wow, that was new and different. I like that. I'm glad I came to your party. Are there things to do with those foods?
I think there's some simple things because I know obviously I'm a big fan of burgers, and you can ask anyone. But even if you're just talking about a burger, you can do tiny little shifts, right? So you could have a lamb burger or a venison burger, which, you know, these are meats that we all know about but still not being incorporated on a regular basis. And a lamb burger is actually really delicious and a little bit lighter, again, with all the heat. Or venison is a little bit different, or even just a pork burger. And I personally don't do as much steak at this time of year as I do fish. And to me, one of the best things to do is just take a nice whole snapper or something and stuff it fresh with herbs, put some lemons, you know, on the skin and stick it on the grill.
All right, let's talk about that because a lot of people are scared of fish.
Yes.
So talk about how you do it.
Well, if you're really scared, then you go to a good, reliable fishmonger and you have them clean it all up for you.
No, I mean they're scared of not cooking it well, or it's going to be overdone or ruined after they paid all this money for it. So what's the secret?
I think when you're working with whole fish, it's actually to me a little bit more approachable than dealing with cut up fish that you're doing like a pan saute. There's I think a little bit more opportunity to ruin the fish there, but snapper, I think it's a great thing. It's relatively flat. Trout is the same way, so it cooks really quickly, so you don't have to worry about, a fat fish that is going to get really cooked in out here and then still be kind of raw in the middle. But, again, you just get, a couple pound snapper, have it cleaned up, and then you just put it, I would say, medium-high heat on the grill. Or if you're really worried about it, start in the oven and just pan roast it. If you roast a fish, it'll take you a long time to ruin it, especially if you've got – I like to – if I put it in the oven, chop it up with a bunch of tomatoes and briny things like capers or olives, some shallots, things like that, and then kind of put that on and let those juices seep into the fish. And since you've got that nice kind of covering that's really juicy, it's going to hold some moisture content in while the fish is roasting. So.
And most fish is not going to hurt you – fish is not going to hurt you if it's undercooked, unlike, say, certain kinds of – like chicken, if you undercook chicken, you can get sick. But with a fish, the biggest sin I think with fish is overcooking it and making it dry. Which again, the rubbing a little oil. If you're using the grill, since we're talking about summertime cooking, and a lot of this happens on the grill, is rub a little olive oil on the surface so that it doesn't stick to the grill, and then don't keep messing with it. Let it sear, get a good sear on one surface, and then get under it, flip it over very gently, and let it sear on. But by the time both sides are properly and seared, your fish is done.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I mean, everyone's pretty comfortable with salmon. Those cedar planks, I mean, they're good and sold in a lot of places for a reason, because you just kind of get those nice and wet, and then you can put the salmon on there, put some nice seasoning on, put it on the grill, and you don't have to even worry about flipping it, because, again, salmon actually, I think, does better when you're kind of cooking it to a medium temperature. And so you don't have to worry about flipping it or the fish breaking. You can just cook it right on the plank, and it actually is kind of a cool serving.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a wood. Pizzazz, the oils from the wood.
You brought this up, Stefan, and I want to bring it up here, because I think a lot of people are concerned about this, but I think they'd like an answer. When you're on vacation or you're spending a weekend around the pool, you may be spending a lot of time with a cocktail in your hand. and you're drinking a lot of liquid because you have to stay hydrated in the sun. There's a way to not get drunk.
This is an urban legend.
Wait a second. You say that using liqueurs and mixers lowers the alcohol content and allows you to drink all day without getting sloppy. Do tell.
Oh, you started that urban legend.
I thought you were actually talking. There was just an article about Bill Cook from Sam Adams, who says if you take a tablespoon of dry Fleischmann's yeast before you start drinking, that the yeast will actually eat the alcohol. So I thought that's where you're going. But no, I mean, yeah, but back to what I was saying about using cordials, and they have lower alcohol in them. They're a 40 proof spirit compared to if you were drinking vodka, gin, or whiskey at 90 proof or 80 proof. So it's actually half the amount of alcohol that you're consuming.
So you're really talking about spreading it out.
Yeah, if you're drinking a raspberry spritzer or something like that, it's going to be a lot lower alcohol than if you were sitting there drinking, you know, vodka tonics all day.
Can you have the raspberry spritzer without the alcohol and enjoy it just as much?
Yeah. I mean, but you know, you'd just be using like a fresh berry puree and club soda, you know, and that would, it'll get you where you're going. You might not be having as much fun as the rest of your friends, but, I'm a proponent of drinking in moderation, you know.
Does the sugar in the beverages convey it into your blood system faster? Or is that one of those true legends?
There's a lot of science that goes into drinking, you know, whether it be in the distilling process or what actually happens in your body. It's a little out of my knowledge. I know that a full stomach and moderation is usually the best way to drink.
So eat.
Definitely eat.
Okay. A lot of people have a lot of people over. Is there a way to do parties with food and drink economically if you're supplying almost everything? I mean, is there a way to do it economically?
Choose the number of your friends wisely.
And even if you're not supplying, guys, I think you suggested potlucks where people bring something.
Yeah, always, if possible.
What should you bring?
If your friends are good cooks, definitely invite them to bring food. I think, again, this is the time of season to use vegetables freely, and vegetables aren't as expensive during the summer when they're coming in because they're more in abundance. So any kind of salads, all different variations of salads, even a potato salad and the sort of cold kind of salads are great fillers. So from an economic standpoint, using vegetables is one way to keep costs down because meat's more expensive than vegetables. So I would start with that. And then, two, I'm just trying to think what I would do when we have people over.
Offer them lots of bread, right, Peter?
Well, it soaks up the alcohol.
Bread isn't an expensive item to produce. Also, flour is much cheaper than even vegetables.
Mike in Charlotte emails, my wife and I once enjoyed a Jack Daniel's honey and lavender drink. Any suggestions for lavender and honey for drink purposes to recreate this drink?
I have a weird sensitivity to lavender. It's big. A lot of people use it. I always get a soapy kind of mouthfeel to lavender. I believe it's the oils that occur naturally in the lavender. I'm not a big fan of it. I know a lot of people love it. The Jack Daniel's, everything with that, the honey is kind of the new cinnamon. The honey's gotten really popular of late. It's also a great natural sweetener. Also, we have like cloisters, and we have some great local honey.
Jack Daniel's actually sells a honey sweetened product.
Honey.
Yeah, there's something good about honey and and alcohol. It goes well.
There are a number of food events every summer in this city, and this summer is no exception. And we probably ought to talk about them as ways to enjoy summertime food before we run out of time. One of them is that Bacon Brews Cruise-In this Sunday. Bacon and beer, really?
Oh, those go together, yeah.
Okay.
Bacon so. Goes with everything.
What else? Goes with everything.
What is that event? What is it about?
Okay, so...
bacon and beer.
Yeah. how do you access it?
So it's this coming Sunday at Atherton Market, and we have about 20 chefs that are going to be participating, making 20 different dishes that have bacon in them. I know that's surprising. And it's actually a really neat fundraising effort. There is a organization that started out grassroots with Chris Reed and Chef Luca from Passionate. I'm sure you've heard of him. Ben Philpott, who's at Block and Grinder and was just featured on an article by Kathleen Purvis.
You have 20 seconds.
20 seconds. Oh, okay. I'll move faster. So it's going to be the 20 bacon dishes. I think your ticket also buys you at least three beers. We'll probably have more breweries. They're all going to be local craft breweries. There's going to be a classic car contest. So if you've got a classic car, you can enter for $15 into a contest, and then it'll be popular choice.
We'll put some of these other summer events up on our website because we didn't have chance to record. There's a lot of stuff going on at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Kat Harris, founder and publisher of Edible Charlotte, Stephen Huebner with Heist Brewery, and Peter Reinhardt with Johnson & Wales. Thank you for the hour.